Now, I've got someone that is 2 years older than me and has been in the radio industry for a long, long time. Probably a few more years longer than I have. And so we welcome David to the show. And we've got a... there's a couple of subjects. I've just written two things down, that's all. There's our script for lunchtime. We've got radio and cost of living. I want to tackle radio first of all because, obviously... You must have, you know, grown up with people that were pioneers of radio, and I sort of came in. You know, I was born in 1965, so I would have sort of started listening to the radio when I was about four or five. I may have Tom Brown rings a bell with me. He was probably the first guy that I remember doing the what would now be the chart show on a Sunday evening between I don't know four and seven. It was something like the top 20. And he would do that. Is it Tom Brown? It was Tom Brown.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just a little bit older than you are, but I suppose the people I grew up with and the radio stations. Radio Luxembourg was one. The American Forces Radio was another. And of course, you had Pete Murray.
Yeah,
David Jacobs. They were the presenters of their era. Very young presenters too. But that is where. One learnt, and that's, I mean, oh, do I give my age away here?
Do you miss them?
Yes, I do. I tell you why I do miss them. I think the nearest, if you like, the kind of people, Terry Wogan was one.
A legend.
An absolute legend. And he ranks with the two names I've just mentioned. And there are a couple of others, but the up-and-coming so-called disc jockeys, no, they haven't gone through the mill.
Okay.
They say about the bands and singers that used to go to the clubs to learn their art. Clubs don't exist anymore, so therefore they go on to the X Factor or Britain's Got Talent. What do you hear? You hear them once and they're gone.
Most of them. Yeah, definitely.
Most of them. But if you look at those that are still around, and probably one of the most... Oh, the Rolling Stones, for instance. Nobody gave them a year when they started.
And there they are, they're just in the process of making or recording a new album.
Yeah, and a good one.
Which I've heard snippets of. I mean, I think some of them are covers. They're all covers, but but they sound fantastic. But, you know, I always remember reading Rod Stewart's autobiography a couple of years ago, and he was talking about his apprenticeship was the 1960s. He travelled around with an array of people, Long John Baldry being one of them, and he learnt his trade... In that 10-year period, and obviously since then, you know, he's reinvented himself a few times with styles of music to suit voice, because obviously you know things change, and he's still around and still doing it. So must be harder for broadcasting, because I've always said that anybody can do it. So to stay at the top of the tree for any amount of years, like the way Wogan did. You had to have some talent, and he was incredibly talented. There are a few other people that that are still around today, quite high profile, still doing it. I've always been a fan of Steve Wright, but for every fan you find of Steve Wright, you find someone that don't like him.
Unfortunately, yes. You see, Steve Wright's, well, I should say, the old school. Tony Blackburn, he was the old school. They were brought up pirate radio days where you were just stuck a pile of records, 45s, in front of a player, and you went on air.
Yeah.
And you actually had to make it. So you dreamt up perhaps ideas like Tony Blackburn did with his dog, if you remember that blessed dog.
Yeah,
and they made it a niche. And people like, as you mentioned, Terry Wogan. Now, Terry Wogan was very much... on the line of David Jacobs. And the secret was, and Terry Wogan said this on a number of occasions, I'm not speaking to millions, I'm speaking to one person.
Yeah, that's how I was brought up, and that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
And that is the secret, really, of what makes a good broadcaster. Plus the fact, not so much the knowledge, but being able to have empathy with other people. And
sure.
That helps.
So is there anybody, apart from Terry Wogan, that you actually miss? You think, oh, he was great, and... You know, because let's say there's a lot of stations. I don't listen to as much radio as maybe I used to years ago, because this place kind of takes up most of my time. But there was, you know, there were a couple of people that I just wouldn't want to miss. You know, there were so many good shows. I used to love Simon Bates when he used to be on, doing the Golden Hour.
Simon Bates, Simon D, as much as you loved or hated him. And funny enough, he's still broadcasting. He's one of the greater broadcasters, Brian Matthews.
Brian Matthews, crikey, Was he Radio 2, Radio Sunday 2. Mornings, very early?
Yep, that's right.
He's still doing that, is he?
He's still doing it. Brian's got to be, I hope I don't get this wrong, Brian, probably in his 80s now.
Crikey.
Yeah, but his knowledge, incredible knowledge of music.
Yeah.
And that's how it should be.
Jimmy Young was another one, was around for years and years and years, and I kind of liked him as well, and you kind of, they kind of shoved him out the door because he was too old, and I felt sorry for him because I thought he still had it. But then you've got to go somewhere, haven't you?
Why?
Well, I guess...
When are we going to... Just think of yourself, Mac, you know, I mean...
Well, yeah, but I chose... When I stopped working the clubs, I chose my time. I chose that that was it. I'm too old to work in clubs, I said, aged 44 or whatever. Yeah. And I thought, that's it. I was the one that said, right, okay, when I'm X amount, I'll stop gigging too. Because I don't want to do that. I want to focus just on radio. So I always remember having a conversation with a guy that I used to work with at the other radio station just up the road there, and his name's Steve Bradley. I'll name and shame him because he's all right. He's all right with this, is Steve. Steve used to work at the Balcony, and he works at the club there for years and years and years, and he was about 10 years older than me, so he's even older than you, because you're only 2 years older than me. I said to him one day, I said, have you ever thought about retiring? Have you ever? And he straight away, back up, and upset with me. And I'm saying, no, I'm being realistic now. Okay, you've been in, you know, radio for a very short period of time, but you've worked in pubs and clubs for loads and loads of time. Wouldn't it be better for you to pick the time that you say, do you know what? I'm going to call it a day then. Because the alternative is, someone says to you, sorry, you can't do this anymore because you've got a younger chap coming in and doing the gig for you. Now, that's a reality. That's probably what would happen. And it did happen. Mm. And he chose to ignore my advice, and it hurt him. And, you know, you think so many people are in the same situation. Surely it's better to pick a time to go rather than somebody telling you you're too old to do the job.
I'm going to say the opposite to that, from personal reasons. I gave up broadcasting, as I explained to you when we met, just over a year ago, for personal reasons. And my wife was really on at me every day, for Christ's sake, why don't you go back to broadcasting, because you're driving me mad. It's something that when you're with broadcasting, you miss it when you're not doing it. Don't ask me why. It's just something there. I mean, let's face it. You and I are face to face. A lot of my broadcasting was done in a studio on my own, on occasions with a studio engineer present. Particularly at night time, I'd be on my own. So with the creaks and the groans and thinking where the ghosts are. But I still missed it. And it's just something that gets into your blood. So I can understand why your friend wanted to go on and on until he probably dropped at the microphone or on the turntable. It is something that it gets into your blood.
Yeah. I'm not saying everybody should do it. I just know in this chat that he didn't take rejection very well. And you knew that at some point your career is going to come to an end. I mean, at some point, that's why I chose to finish my gigs and finish the club work when I did. I finished when I wanted to, rather than someone telling me. And that's never bothered me, that I said, right, I'm calling time on this now. Yeah. I don't really want to be out late anyway. So, you know, and that was it. And that's never bothered me. But if I'd have kept going and replaced by a younger model, that might have hurt me for years to come afterwards.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. And the same as I'm sure you've had the experience where you've listened to broadcasters and think, oh my goodness, how on earth did they get the job?
Yeah.
And I've met them. And yeah, I think it's terrible because they really couldn't be bothered about broadcasting. And they're just there. It's an ego thing on the whole. But with the young and up-and-coming people, I think they have to learn. And the thing they have to learn is not only just working on a desk, but actually that they are talking to who knows, 4 million, 8 million, 10 million people. We don't know. I mean, if it's here on the island, you might be talking about, what is it, 400,000?
No, we have about 140,000-odd people that live on the island.
Yeah. Actually physically lives. But in summertime, it doubles.
Yeah.
You know. Now, you might call that small, but it's not, because they all mean one thing to you as a broadcaster.
Sure. Sure. It's a fascinating thing, radio. It really is, and how it's changed over the years. I mean, you know, I think we mentioned pioneers. I don't think there's a bigger pioneer of radio than Kenny Everett.
Oh, yes. Yes. Now, Kenny Everett, he really hit it on the head. Totally. He was the best broadcaster for his era, to say the least. I'm not so sure if he'd go down so well today with the younger viewer listeners.
Don't you think?
I think he was probably too way out for them. You know, they're not into that kind of humour that he had.
See, I think he probably would have done, because he was different and he stood out. He actually took it and wanted to take it to a different level and do it the way that he wanted to do it. Oh, and yes. Boy, did he do it the way that he wanted to do it. And without him, there wouldn't have been a Steve Wright, I'm sure, because Steve Wright's act was based on a lot of Kenny Everett, especially in the early days at Radio 1, where he would be having all these characters on his show, like Mr. Angry and Gervais and Damien the Social Worker and all those people.
That's right.
Probably based on a lot of that was based on, you know, Kenny Everett. I think he would have been, no matter what era he would have been in, I think people would have loved him.
I think they would have loved him, but it's what time of day would you have put him on?
Any time.
You know, of course. But, definitely, put him on in the morning.
Well, yeah, breakfast, mid-morning.
Breakfast, you need to be woken up.
Yeah.
He would have been ideal. Absolutely superb.
So would he be in your final lineup? Just say, for instance, if you had to pick a daytime lineup, you know, let's start with the breakfast show. Who are you going to get to do the breakfast show? You get past or present, alive or dead. Who are you going to get to do your breakfast show?
This will surprise you, Zoe Ball.
Oh crikey, really?
Yeah, she's a good at what she does, and that female voice in the morning is just. Right, you don't need somebody like Chris Evans who's jumping up and down and throwing his arms in the air.
You're right, it surprised me. So Zoe Ball breakfast, she wouldn't have got the gig in my book, but there you go.
Who would you have chosen?
I don't know, because the older broadcaster in me would have gone for Wogan.
Yeah, well,
because obviously. He's seen it, done it for so many years. Yeah. And then I'm kind of I'm struggling a little bit. The younger person in me would have probably been, you know, when Steve Wright did the breakfast show on Radio 1, I didn't like it. I preferred him doing, the afternoon. And I don't think there's another afternoon ever been another afternoon broadcaster like Wrighty. But I think, again, without Kenny Everett, there wouldn't have been a Steve Wright, not in the way that we know him. So breakfast. I don't know. I used to enjoy Noel Edmonds when I was a kid, because he was always on the wind-up and playing pranks.
Yes, he was. Yeah, I'd forgotten about Noel Edmonds. Yes, yeah. He would be very good back on radio too.
And do you remember Mike Smith?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Now, Mike Smith replaced Dave Lee Travis.
DLT, yeah.
And I thought he did a brilliant job. I loved his voice. I loved his style. I thought Mike Smith would be in any daytime lineup of mine.
Yeah, Mike Smith and Sarah Green.
No, not Sarah Green as well. Forget Sarah
Green. Oh, okay.
I thought he was all right by himself. I didn't mind Dave Lee Travis. Do you know, there's two things that have happened in radio that when I go back, I think, I'm so glad that I heard that, because that was awesome. That was awesome radio. One was the time when Dave Lee Travis resigned live on air.
Oh, yeah.
Which was about 1991.
91, that was.
And he just came out with this... was Sunday morning, I think it was. And he just came out with this, they're changing things and so on and so on. And I don't like it, so I'm resigning. And I was so glad to hear that. But trumping that was... there was some live football coverage. And it's a guy that is incredibly talented. And he's obviously worked in TV and radio. Danny Baker. Now, Danny Baker was commentating or part of the commentary team on a match, but I think it was Wimbledon and Chelsea, but Wimbledon missed out on the opportunity to get into the League Cup final because the referee was blind and didn't see a particular decision that he should have made. And he was on the radio at 10 o'clock at night. I remember being in the car, coming home from my... It was after 10 o'clock, because they played extra time and penalty, so it would have been about 20 past 10. I've just finished my evening show at the radio station up the road there, and I've driven to Ryde, and I've heard this rant from Danny Baker, and he's saying he ought to be going into the referee's changing room and playing the footage back and saying, "There, referee, you got it wrong, and you cost this team a place in the final of the League Cup. What have you got to say for yourself?" And it was a rant, but he was so right in what he was saying. That, you know, putting them on the spot and asking them the question. Equally, I'd like to go to footballers and say, talk us through this moment when you stamped on this bloke's leg and then shrugged your shoulders as if you didn't know what you were doing. I think there's a show there. But anyway, he had this rant. Next morning, they said, "Oh, he's been removed from Five Live." I thought it was genius radio, but they kicked him off. I'm sorry, that was one of the two biggest highlights in radio, live radio, that you'd heard. Yeah, we hear things recorded and, you know, repeated and so on and so forth. So we do kind of hear some wonderful things when you listen to live radio, and you never know what's going to happen, do you?
Well, I think this is the beauty of live radio. I've always liked and done live radio. I've done a few pre-records, but there's just something about sitting in a studio with a microphone. You can make a mistake, you can cough, you can sneeze, you can do anything, but you have to think on your feet. I'm sure you've done it, Mac, when you've sat in a studio and things have gone totally haywire.
Oh, crikey, yeah.
And you've literally got seconds, because you're on air, to put it right.
Seat your pants radio.
Absolutely.
I remember doing a show like this, you know, it was then called The Phone In, years ago, in another building, in another station. And I remember we had this lady came in, and she wanted to talk about well-being and stuff, and she wanted to talk about all this money, and she said, "Do you mind if I light these things, these chopsticks things?" You know, and so anyway, she lit these things, and we started having this conversation live on air, and I look out the studio window, and there's all this running around, and I think, what the hell's going on? And then I see this fireman walk across. I'm thinking, Christ, the fire crew out there. What's the...? Then there was another. Then there was a load of them, and I'm thinking, hello. And then all the people are being ushered out of the building, and I'm looking at this and thinking, the hell's going on out there? There must be some kind of fire. They left me in the studio with this lady, whilst they were obviously, you know, getting everybody else out of the building. And I'm thinking, in a minute, they're going to get me out. Surely they're going to ask me to leave. Everyone else is going. I'm starting to feel a little bit uncomfortable. Looking through the window again, nobody out there. No one at all. Anyway, it turns out that it was a false alarm, because some idiot had set off the fire alarm. The idiot was sat opposite me. She was the one that lit the joysticks in the studio.
Well, I'm glad that's kind of happened to somebody else. Yeah, I've had that happen. And I can vaguely, through the thick studio walls, hear a bell going, not thinking it's the fire alarm. And everybody else is on the car park, and I'm still there, putting the next record on.
See, now you mentioned something. I mean, it all changed. Technology changed, radio changed in about sort of late 90s, when, you know, we had computerized systems. People were obviously using CDs from the mid 1980s onwards, but, you know, obviously it was tapes. And it was records, and those records didn't last very long. So you couldn't sort of put two songs on back-to-back and go to the loo like you can now.
Oh, no, definitely you couldn't. The only way you could do that, I mentioned earlier, we used to have a box that would take 10 45s on your desk. And you could actually let them play one after the other, as long as they didn't stick, which is what they often did.
Right.
So then you could go and have a coffee or whatever. But yeah, I suppose I've gone through the mill with that. 45s, CDs, LPs, tapes. It's what you had at the time. And when everything started getting computerized, that is when a lot of people just fell away. And I guess studio engineers didn't have to sit in the studio anymore.
Made them redundant, sadly, then.
They sadly became redundant to a greater extent and they probably went into television, but because they're still required there.
Do you miss those days? Do you miss the fact that, you know, because I must admit, it's like driving a car. And I've heard so many people say, when you're driving a car and you all of a sudden you get an automatic, it takes all the fun out of driving. So does, you know, the fact that we've gone computerised and we don't have to queue up the records anymore and take the carts out and bung them in the machine and play them, is it less interesting, this side of the desk?
I think it's taken a little bit of the excitement away from it, because you were flying by the seat of your pants, literally. Because, you know, we've all done it. We've picked up a piece of music and announced it, and it's been totally something else.
Yeah.
That has happened, yeah. Also, the fact, I think, with the computers, they tend to be very clinical, in as much as that if you were playing a bit of music and you didn't like it, or you didn't think the listening audience would like it, you could take it off and change it. I know you can do a similar thing with a computer, but you could literally hear what you're doing, which made it live.
Because you just reminded me of Mike Reed. That was another moment in radio where he started to play Frankie Goes to Hollywood and Relax, and got halfway through and said, I'm not playing this, it's disgusting, or I'm not playing this song ever again. And next thing you know, it's made number one. I'm pretty sure he must have had shares in that song.
Well, he probably did. The same as, I mean, I don't know quite so much about these days, but then you used to get people that would come round from the record companies flogging you the latest. This is going to be number one, play it. And you had a choice. You could say, well, go away, come back tomorrow. Or you could take that record and you could actually make it a number one record by how many times you played it.
See, I don't remember that era missed me. Mm. And you know, you hear those stories and you think how much more fun that would have been back then to try and champion a record and actually, okay, I'm going to play this half a dozen times, and because I'm going to play it half a dozen times, it's going to start zooming up the charts, and you know, it gives you a little bit of credibility there as well, doesn't it?
It gives you credibility, and as things have changed over the years, and you've now got for charity records. And everybody, the organisations for charity records, and there is one particularly I did for Help the Heroes. There's a couple of songwriters I have contact with, and they sent me this disc, as it still was, and could you play this, David? And I played it, and I played it, and I played it. Now, I believe it did get a lot of money for them. I don't think that was just down to me, but certainly it gave them an awful lot of coverage.
Right.
And made them known. Because I spoke to them, as I do most times during the year, and they're going from strength to strength as songwriters, because they're getting approached by current artists. Would you write me a song? So it did them good.
Okay, look, we're just going to go back to the breakfast show, because I thought of somebody that I really liked. Who does the tea time show on Radio 2 nowadays?
What, the 5 o'clock run?
Yes. He used to be on Radio 1, and he used to do the breakfast show. That's who I'd have as breakfast show host.
Oh, not Phil.
Simon Mayo. I should have remembered it, because I used to have a cat. Simon Mayo used to do the breakfast show on Radio 1. Now he does a tea time show on Radio 2. Thank you, Chris. And we used to have two cats, Fluff and Mayo. They were both obviously named after radio broadcasters. And we actually did an interview with Fluff. Fluff Freeman, long time ago, and it was legendary. Loved the guy to bits in radio. He was just a legend, wasn't he? And I always remember him telling the story about Fluff and Mayo, and he cheered and laughed and thought it was hilarious. In fact, we had a cat called Fluff, and I said, "Yeah, sadly, he died. He got run over," which didn't go down very well. But Fluff and Mayo, Simon Mayo in the morning. He was great on Radio 1 all those years ago. I didn't mind Chris Evans when he was. But these people get too big for their boots, and it's a bit like the other Chris Moyles.
Oh, Chris Moyles,
who I used to listen to in the afternoon when he was on Radio 1, and he was in the process of on the up, Okay, and so he was hungry, and he was, you know, looking for the next big gig, and he was incredibly talented. But then when he got Breakfast, he just got too big for his boots. And whatever I say, people are going to like, and I don't really care whether they like it or not. That was That's the kind of attitude that he got from him.
He did, and I think he blew his time with the BBC. You may remember this when he ranted for nearly half an hour about salaries, didn't play one piece of music.
Right. Did you hear it?
Yeah. And I couldn't believe what was happening, because I thought, well, surely one of the studio engineers is going to stick a record on.
Yeah.
Or play a tape, whatever they're going to do. But no, he just went on and on and on. So I assumed that possibly he was in that day on his own. I'd have never got away with it.
Just locked the studio door.
He locked the door, and that was it. But funny enough, a lot of the people we've been talking about come from pirate radio.
Yeah.
Back in the '60s, early '60s, which is where they learnt their craft in many ways, and have carried on. And it was the BBC that had to, in the end, say, well, sorry, we've lost, we're going to hire you. But they were the guys that carried on and made their music. And I think that's what we've got today with Radio 2, because if you remember, Radio 2 came out of pirate broadcasting.
Okay, well, you'd remember that because you're two years older than me.
Yeah, well, Tony Blackburn. Yeah. He was the first pirate presenter that was offered a contract by the BBC to do a morning breakfast show.
And obviously, that was 1967?
That would be about 66, 67.
So, what's your thoughts on Tony Black? Because he used to do, you know, a half-decent breakfast show, a little bit before my time.
Yeah, he had his moments. He could get very personal on the radio, particularly with young ladies that he'd been dated and they dropped him.
Didn't he do with, was it Tessa Wyatt you're referring
Tessa Wyatt,
to? Where there was a song, wasn't there a song that he played about over and over again, and he just continued to play, could play this song because he was mortified because she had dumped him?
Yep. Completely, it got to a point where it did get too personal, and the BBC had to give him a couple of weeks break, which certainly. But as a no, he was good, very very good. Shame he's still not on the radio.
Well, he is, but he's
but not on.
You've got
to mainline
like search for him, haven't you?
Yeah, you have to search for him, and the same as DLT, which was a great shame that his career was brought to a sudden stop.
Whack, oops.
Yeah, was rather. I used to enjoy particularly going on the M1 or the M6 or whatever, or particularly if I was driving up to or from Scotland, listening to him on Gold Radio.
Right.
Brilliant.
I thought he was great on Radio 1, to be honest. I mean, it's sad when he went, but obviously, you know, it's again going back to that moment where you say, okay, Dave Lee Travis said, things are changing around here, I don't like them, so I'm going.
That's right.
Rather than someone put the knife in, you know, and I kind of respect that as well, because I think it's knowing when, you know, you should go, and maybe that's why Wogan went as well, because I think the writing was on the wall for him a bit when he decided that he was going to hang up the old microphone. But I thought he was an incredibly talented guy, and maybe, you know, he would push anybody for that breakfast show space. What about mid-morning? Let's move on to a mid-morning show. Who would you... Who has been... For me, it's Mike Smith every time.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd go along with that. Yeah.
I think he was young and he was fresh. And again, I think he had to step into the DLT mid-morning slot. And I think he only did it for about two, three years, if that. But I just thought he was just a breath of fresh air. And he was obviously a lot younger than DLT at that time, anyway.
Well... Yeah, well, time doesn't stand still, you know, Mac. But yeah, I mean, with people like Mike Smith, I think they kind of learned, and I think what happened was that the listening public either rejected them straight away to start with and wouldn't listen to them again, or they'd stay with them and then they became a household name.
Yeah.
I think that happened to an awful lot of people. I can remember, believe it or not, Terry Wogan went through that period at the start. A lot of people thought after Jimmy Young, oh no, who's this Irish guy, you know?
Yeah,
we don't want to hear him. We like Jimmy Young and his cooking program. I don't know, you wouldn't know about that.
Well, did I look a bit sort of spaced then when you mentioned the cooking
program? Yeah, you did, actually. Yeah, I mean,
I'm only 27, remember.
I know. He used to do a 5-minute recipe.
Right.
And they always start off, and what's on the menu today, Jim? Which is, when are you?
Oh, I do remember that.
Yeah.
That was a good impression, because I remembered it from the impression.
Right. But, you know, people, when Jimmy Young went, oh, gosh.
We had a conversation with the young man that was on the Four P's course earlier on, and we were trying to get over to him that, you know, radio above all else is communication. It's nothing else. It's just communication. Everything else comes underneath it.
Yeah.
You know, it is all about communication, and there's been some fantastic communicators, you know, on the radio.
Oh, yes.
And some people have turned, you know, that they've gone from not doing radio to being... And one of the things that annoys me about the BBC is that every now and again you'll tune in, and if Steve Wright's got a week off, they've got someone else in that his forte is television. I think he went for a phase of getting Graham Norton on to do to do the, and you think, come on, just stick to TV. It's not the same. But some people really one show that I really really enjoyed on a Saturday morning, and it was probably one of the last shows that I made a really big point of listening to, was Jonathan Ross, Saturday mornings 10 till 1, and he was totally different on the radio until he met Russell Brand, and it all changed. But I remember him doing an interview with Bruce Forsyth, and this is probably going back about 10 maybe 12 years.
Yeah.
And he treated him with such respect, and it was such a brilliant interview, and you just thought, we don't really see the best of Rossi, because we remember him for being an idiot half the time.
Yes, I think that's how he's portrayed most of the time.
But a brilliant communicator and a brilliant broadcaster.
I think this is it. He's one of the few that made the crossover from television to broadcasting.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be seen. Simple as that. He prefers the camera not to be on him. And that is why he was suitable for radio. Because if you watch him when he's doing a TV programme, he's a very nervous guy.
Yeah.
Now, maybe it's because of the people he's got on. He doesn't know what they're going to do next. But, he always kind of, you know, he's sitting there and thinking, oh, dear, what volcano is going to happen next? But, yeah, he made a good crossover. Definitely.
Hey, look, we should take a break, and we'll come back and we'll do part two. Maybe we'll continue the conversation with radio and find out our ultimate lineup. And I do know we want to chat about the cost of living as well.
Of course.
Because I want to make a point about the cost of living purely and simply because they've just announced that the cost of living has gone up 1%. Well, that's not what I was expecting. I was expecting a breakdown of, you know, our cost of living, because things have changed over the last 20 years. So we'll do that when we come back after a quick break. It's 24 minutes to one now.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by jobsontheisleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
This is Vectis Radio.
Serving the Isle of Wight and beyond.
www.vectisradio.com.
The Castle in St Helens offers four-star self-catering accommodation in two properties sleeping up to seven people. The properties have secluded grounds with off-road car parking just a few minutes' walk away from the beach and a village green. St Helens is a charming village, and the Castle is an excellent base for your Isle of Wight holiday, whether you want to explore all the island has to offer or just get away from it all. We're open all year, dogs are welcome, and short breaks are available. Go to our website at www.sthelenscastle.co.uk for full details of prices and availability, or call us on 01983 875 993, that's 875 993, to find out more or to book your ideal getaway.
Andy Gustar has details of the £10 meal deal at Hamilton's Fine Foods.
Oh, that's been running for quite some time, and we're still doing it for £10, and I think, why change something that's really working well? You get a fresh chicken in there, 400 grams of steak mince, you get a pound of sausages, and you get a quarter of ham. All of that for £10, there's a lot of meals there for a family of two or three. The important thing to add to that is it's quality food as well. You must, I think, for the sake of your own health, look to a quality product which is going to be that good for you.
Hamilton's are in Newport, they're in Pyle Street. Where else are you?
We're in Cowes High Street, Wootton Bridge. We also have a shop now on Dodder Industrial Estate.
Hamilton's Fine Foods, the best local butcher in town.
Having problems with your phone? Or are your electrics on the blink? Maybe you need your appliances or your building wiring tested. Or just a light fitted. Westway Audio and Electrical Services can help you. For friendly, reliable service, call Kelvin on 754666 or click westwhiteaudio.co.uk. All island coverage.
The White Military and Heritage Museum in Northwood. The museum will excite your senses and immerse you in a world of human success over adversity. Call 01983 300037 for more details or to book your ride.
Hi, it's me, Chip here. I've got my own dance show. The dance show is called Chip's Dance Hall Show. I will be playing a variety of dance tunes that you can dance and tap your feet to. So come and join the party from 10 p.m. till 11 on Sunday night.
Stay social and get in touch. It's at Vectis Radio on Twitter. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
Here we are in part two, and do you know what? I just think we've got so much to talk about when it comes down to radio. We do the cost of living another day. You don't want to bring things down, do we? We were just talking about pirate radio during the course of the commercial break. There was one television programme that I used to love back in the 1980s, and they only ever did one series of it, and it was all about a pirate radio station, and Lenny Henry was in it, and he played a character called Delbert Wilkins. And it was I thought it was a brilliant show. I used to watch this late on Thursday nights, and I remember recording it and watching it over and over again, thinking, wishing that I could work in one of these radio stations, because it used to just pop up here, there and everywhere, and they keep moving it, and it was just such a funny programme. But I'm always fascinated by programmes that show a radio station in it, and because it always amazes me where they don't pay too much attention to detail. You'd see people without headphones, and they'd be like speaking to someone that is on the telephone. Now you know that you're not going to be able to hear them, because you know, as soon as you push up your microphone, the lights go on, the music cuts out of the studio, and the only thing that can be heard is through your headphones. So those kind of programs, they really annoy me. They really frustrate me, but that's one programme that has really stood out for me. You know, the Delbert Wilkins show, I can't remember what it was called. It was just called the Lenny Henry Show or something. He played Delbert Wilkins.
It was just called the Lenny Henry Show, I do remember that. And that was just a section of it, which was hilarious.
No, it was the whole show was based within a radio station. They were all characters. It was not the, you know, sketch show.
No,
it may have been born out of a sketch show, but it was definitely just a one-off comedy, six episodes, one series only, and it was based on this pirate radio station, and it was fascinating, but it never really took off.
Yeah, I think it was rather surprising it didn't take off, because I mean he's a very funny guy anyway, and the titles of names he came up with were absolutely hilarious. But I tell you, on pirate radios, on the ships particularly, those sort of things happen because you didn't know what you were going to be confronted with. Because one moment you could be on an absolute mill pond, and the next moment you were over the side, literally.
Yeah. Do you reckon we'll ever go back to those days?
I would like to say yes. I know that they still exist all around Europe. There are various pirate ships.
Yeah.
But they're not really pirate ships anymore. They're just offshoots of land-based companies.
See, the trouble is, I think that where music has changed so much and society has changed hugely and the technology's changed, it's not quite there, is it? It's almost like you've moved on. Everybody has moved on from the way we used to do things. And I don't think... did we mention something earlier on that kind of triggered this, where we said about the way things were in the last 20 years is similar to, you mentioned rock and roll. You grew up with rock and roll. And
that's
when
right.
somebody, you were so used to that boring old stuff before
yes.
rock and roll was invented, that when rock and roll first came out, people were going, you know, people of a certain age were going, what's this racket? What's this noise? And 20 years later, they did the same thing with punk rock, didn't they?
Exactly. You know, depending on, obviously, the adults of the time, I guess having had a punk rock children myself, and they still are. They've never grown out of it.
We were just talking about the the Sex Pistols. I was telling you the story at the weekend. I loved the punk rock. I didn't like it at the time, but I love it now. And I love the Sex Pistols, I love the Damned, I love the Clash, and all these bands that were, you know, punk rock. And we were listening to the Great Rock and Roll Swindle over the weekend. And I thought, I put this on because I thought, well, you know, just give it a blast. I haven't played this for years and years and years. And all the memories came flooding back. And it was like, hang on a minute. These guys were really talented and funny. And there's some orchestral stuff going on here as well. Mm-hmm. And I listened to the whole album and I thought it was really, really enjoyable. But then you think back and you think, that must have been an absolute nightmare for anybody broadcasting in those days, because they wouldn't have been able to broadcast 90% of it, would they?
Well, no, that is where the pirate ships came into their own.
Exactly.
Because they could broadcast it. If a record had been banned, and I can think of one that I used to play, Poisoning Pigeons in the Park, which was the title of the song, American record, I had it brought over. It was funny how some records were banned simply because of context, or how somebody thought.
Hang on, Poisoning Pigeons
in the Park.
In the Park was banned.
Yeah.
Sorry, why was it banned?
Because it was literally that, Poisoning Pigeons in the Park.
Oh, crikey.
It was a kind of early punk, I should imagine, you'd probably call it.
So, I mean, where do we sit now then? Because I know most of these songs that we kind of, you know, Mike Reed banned in the 1980s, we're still playing. We'll play Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Relax, like everyone else, and they won't bat an eye, will they?
Well, they weren't. The same as, I'll relate a little story to you and the listeners, because I pointed out to the head of the station that I was broadcasting for at the time, Jonathan King, when his troubles started.
Sure.
And we was told, you do not play a Jonathan King record.
Right. Good.
Now, yeah, good, maybe. But if you look at the list of acts that he wrote for,
that's a minefield.
You could be off the air.
Yeah.
It was that simple. And that was my argument to that particular studio director. I said, look, I've got to play it. I don't care if Jonathan King wrote it. We play it.
Yeah.
And I played it.
So you wouldn't play Jonathan King records, but you
didn't have to.
You'd play songs that he may have written, but by somebody else.
By somebody else. Yeah. I mean, let's face it, he didn't make that many records.
No.
I mean,
I'm just thinking of someone waving their knickers in the air. What was that song? That was St. Celia or something.
St. Celia, yeah. It was a bit of a fun record, but I suppose it would upset certain community.
Do you know, it's really quite strange the way things have changed, because they've changed massively. Because I'm thinking now, Paul McCartney, High, High, High. Someone, obviously we know what it is, and somebody, you know, that was banned, and yet Perfect Day was all right. So I don't know who was like the controllers back then, but you must have wanted to cuff them around the head and just sort of say, get out, go on, let us do this, let us sort this out, because you're not consistent enough.
No, they're not consistent. And if you take of a lot of records the lyrics, you could read anything into a lot of it.
Oh, crikey. We wouldn't have a playlist.
You wouldn't have a playlist at all. Absolutely.
I remember my son, and we're in the car. We're listening to a U2 album, cassette, CD, call it what you will, and Sunday Bloody Sunday come on. And we all know what Sunday Bloody Sunday is, and the bloody reference in it is, you know, not swearing, it's Sunday, as in that's bloodshed, right.
Yeah.
Okay? And he started singing this song, and every time we got in the car, he wanted Sunday Bloody Sunday, Dad, purely and simply because he wanted to be able to swear and get away with it. Oh, it's not swearing, Dad, because I explained it to him what it was all about. And you think, okay, so that song wasn't played on the radio, but nobody would bat an eye now, would they? And things have changed dramatically.
Totally, dramatically, and I think a lot depends on the person who's in control of what's being played. I can well remember, I think I told you I got involved with hospital radio, part of my life, and I played a record, Stairway to Heaven.
Right.
Hospital radio?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? People lying in bed, some not so good.
Sense of humour.
And, yeah, and every week that particular HBA station, they used to take note of listeners. Very complicated, but they used to see who was listening to what programme was being broadcast and how many listeners were listening to what particular record. And ironically, after I played Stairway to Heaven, that was number one for about a month. Now, having been told, well, no, we shouldn't really play it.
Did you dedicate it to anybody that sadly no longer with us?
Yeah, it was dedicated to the gentleman who actually asked for it.
Yeah.
He was an ex-military man. I can remember him to this day in his 90s. Fun, wonderful stories he had. And always meant that I could never get back to the studio until I was almost on. And he asked for it. And I was a bit surprised. I thought, you know, your age, Stairway to Heaven, I mean, I can't imagine it. But he set a precedence, that guy. Wonderful.
I think it's fascinating when you think of all the songs that have been banned, and we had this conversation a little while ago with you know, songs that should be banned and taken off, and you think, okay, they got it wrong in the 1970s, they banned High, but they let Perfect Day slip through the net. They even some years later let Perfect Day be some kind of Children in Need song. So
yeah.
And you think, come on, let's push it a little bit.
Yes. But
Where'd you draw the line? Where'd you draw the line on songs that you can't play on the radio? The conversation went to the next level, which was, okay, if you then come back and say, right, let's look at every song that you've got on a playlist. Okay, one of the guys from Bay City Rollers, wasn't he done for having child pornography on his computer? So she'll be banned, you know, Bay City Roller songs. There was certain members of other bands, and I could name and shame lots of people. I don't really want to do that now because I want to keep it nice and light-hearted.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have a playlist. And I was trying to explain how difficult it is now being a program controller when you've got youngsters that are involved and they're going to be hearing songs like The Jam, and, you know, That's Entertainment, which is a fabulous tune. And halfway through, he says, let's go in out and a kick in the balls. And you think, OK, well, that's going to go on the radio, that is. And they're going to hear it. And that's another one of my favourites, son's favourites as well, because he can then sing that and get away with it. So it's an absolute minefield.
It's a total minefield. I don't think I've ever banned anything I've ever played. But I can understand, watching the television the other week, just called a snippet of it, this punk rapper that they've had on, and I caught it when she was doing her act, and I thought, that's a bit obscene, don't like it, wouldn't want to hear it. And I think that was about the first time ever. I think it was probably the words that she was using. I don't think it was necessary.
Well, I think anything with bad language in, obviously, I think, you know, shouldn't see a daylight playlist, as far as I'm concerned. But when you have things like, and I say it's double standards, because what do they have, 1 year, 1987, George Michael brought out I Want Your Sex. Okay, I Want Your Sex. And they thought, ooh, we'll ban this, because it's not right, we'll ban it. So then a year later, Salt and Pepper brought out I Want Your... Oh, let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Yeah. What's the difference?
No difference, really, except in the person that banned it.
That's where maybe, you know, when it comes down to radio, that's probably the most frustrating thing in radio, is those guidelines and having people that they've got an opinion, and that opinion you have to stick to. But you think, hang on a minute, you can match that. You're banning that, but this is far worse, but you've allowed this through the net.
But you can take that even further. Television and the news reels showing what happens in wars.
Ah, don't get me started.
Well, you know, it's the same scenario.
Absolutely.
Exactly the same.
Oh, one of the biggest things that I've seen on the television in the last few years is when Colonel Gaddafi, they brought out Colonel Gaddafi on a board out of some rubble, and they said that he's been shot, and they said, this is ITV, and they basically said, these next pictures may upset you because there's some blood, You may see some blood, and they may be upsetting, okay? So they bring out Colonel Gaddafi on a board, and he's obviously been shot in the head.
Mm.
And you think, this is at 7:30, breakfast time. The next story was Ricky Gervais. He was at an award ceremony, and he was giving somebody an award, and he used a term that they couldn't use. And we thought, hang on a minute. You can show somebody with a bullet wound in the head that has killed him.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't use the term, and the term, forgive me, was Mong. Now, okay, that's not a nice expression, but what would you rather be greeted with at 7:30 first thing in the morning? I think I'd rather be treated like a grown-up and said, this man used the expression, and it's not allowed to be used, you know, ever again. We should never use this term ever again. And they use that word so you know exactly what it is. I don't need to see a man with a bullet wound in his head.
No, I mean, this is it. And it's the same as then, usually I found, that after they've shown that, you'll get an advert for children in need. And I think, hang on a minute, yeah. You know. where we've been ploughing money for the last 60-odd years into these countries and... you know, it hasn't made then that much of a difference.
Hey, look, we're running out of time. There's so many things that we're getting back onto the radio track again. We mentioned Kenny Everett, one of the things that I remember seeing, that there's some video footage of him, and there's a lot of video footage on YouTube if you ever want to check it out. It is fascinating stuff. But one of the things that I saw and I thought, that is just so clever and so legendary, and no one will ever be able to do that. He's actually editing a reel-to-reel tape while it's playing. So you see this thing spinning round and it's playing, and he's actually editing this thing while it's, you know, and it's obviously going to play at some point when the tape gets to it. And you think, oh, I've never seen that done before, and I don't suppose we'll ever see that done again.
Oh. Well, I suppose having done that a number of times in my life, when we used to have tapes with music, and you had to actually cut and split.
Yeah.
And you had your little machine, and a razor blade.
Did you have one of those little boards with the angle, the 90 angle thing, and the tape and stuff? Tape,
yeah.
What, have you still got that?
I haven't got the boards, but I've got the tapes.
A splicing board.
Splicing, yeah. It was the splice tapes.
Yeah, fascinating. And I always remember a guy called Andrew Carter came into our radio station at the time, 1999 it was, and we were still using CDs and reel-to-reels and carts. And he came in and said, I'm going to bring you into the next century. And we started using this Adobe Audition thing.
Oh, yeah.
And we thought, and we looked at it, that'll never catch on. That'll never catch on. What are you doing that for? And you got, don't you know how to use the tape thing? We'll show you, it's not a problem. He said, no, this is the way forward. And it was, and we've never looked back.
Yeah. The Audition is a fantastic revelation.
It is.
It really is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The things you can do with that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still much a great fan of CDs. I suppose purely because I can sit at home and I can put a program together and cut out music I don't want, and I can splice the music on the computer. And I know that I can put a program and time it, and I know exactly what I've got to use.
Yeah.
And particularly if it's an emergency.
Yeah.
Quite often happens.
Do you know, you just touched on something there that I think, you know, broadcasters is... I love the way that things are nowadays, purely and simply because you can focus on what you're talking about.
Yes.
It's all programmed, it's all simple, and it's there for a reason, and it's been like this for, believe it or not, probably the late 70s, since we've been able to record and everything programmed and so on and so forth. You know, it's slowly travelled around the world where now, you know, everybody's computerised, but it took a bit of time. But I think we can now concentrate on the show. But the one thing that we do miss is... You know, and I missed it. You know, when you're doing a gig, you can pull out the record sleeve, see what there's detail on there.
Read the notes.
There's exactly, and you know, it would have been. I would have. That's the one thing I missed in radio. Yeah. because it bypassed my, I was too late. Even though I was only 2 years younger than you, I bypassed that. I didn't see it. But that's the one thing I would imagine that you miss most of all about radio is reading the sleeve notes and telling them, hey, look, this has got new single sticker on it. This is coming out and it's from the new album because it says on there, the new album. And check out the B-side on this because it's a version of their own version of something else.
That's right.
And you ain't got that no more.
No, I miss it like mad. Same as I miss the wonderful artwork.
Yeah.
You know, on the covers.
Oh, we could talk all day about that. We've run out of time. I'm just thinking Porky Prime Cuts.
Really?
Yeah, the reason why I'm talking Porky Prime Cuts is because some of the time when you have a look in a record, a 7-inch record, in that groove at the end, as you get to the label, there was always something written in there.
Always a message.
And, yeah, nine times out of ten, it was Porky Prime Cuts.
Yes.
Honestly, there's a load of singles there behind you. You want to have a look through? We'll check them out together. Hey, look, it's been an absolute joy to be with
you. How were you, mate?
Yeah. Stand by, because on the way, some other geezer that's been in radio for a long, long time, and I'm sure he's got some stories too, is Chris Sullivan, and he's here in two jiffies.